Have your weekend breakfast
with Refilwe and Mpakanyane on 702.
Let's walk the talk.
And at 14 minutes past six, I'm hoping to catch you before you go out on your morning jog or before you head out to the gym. Essentially, you know, let's have this conversation before you start off your day and kick things off of course, on a healthy note. Joining us, as promised, is the director of FitPro, the Institute of Fitness Professionals, Derek Archer. And we're taking a look at workout tips that you never knew you needed. Easy mindset hacks, like hyping yourself up with positive self-talk to actual physical action, like tapping muscles for better activation. But of course, I'm not the expert here. Let me welcome to Weekend Breakfast once again, Derek Archer. Derek, always a pleasure. Good morning.
Good morning, Rafael. Thank you for having me. How are you doing?
I'm exceedingly well, Derek. I'm very, very well. Feeling a little guilty for having this conversation because it's been a while since I attended my Pilates class. So, yeah.
Well, now you've put it out there and everyone heard that.
Now I've put it out there, everyone heard it. And I've given myself a little nudge, as it were. Very public nudge, actually. But I'm very well, Derek. I hope the same goes for you.
Yes, thank you.
Derek, workout tips you never knew you needed. I guess many runners or people who are, you know, very active will generally say the hardest part of any workout or any exercise is putting on your sneakers or getting out of bed or just, you know, getting into the gym. That seems to be the hardest part for so many people.
Most definitely.
Let's start there. Getting yourself there, motivating yourself. What kind of advice do you tend to give your clients and the people that you're dealing with when it comes to motivation? Because we can't be inspired every single day, can we?
No, not at all. There's a huge amount of internal pressure we create for ourselves with committing to training and committing to do our exercise and so on. Despite the fact that we know that it's very beneficial to us, we know about all the good things and so on, it just can be very challenging, especially now if you take a look outside. It's after six and it's still pretty dark. It becomes a bit of a challenge in itself. So small things, you know, that your preparation, you've committed to something. You've decided you're going to be training or you're going to get up every morning and train or go for a run, whatever it is. The easiest thing to do is to make your life as easy as possible. So set your stuff out the night before so you don't have to scratch around in the morning. You don't have to look for things. That just becomes a bit of a hack in itself. Anxiety provoking because you can't find your shoes, someone's put them somewhere, that kind of stuff. Put them there, but also put everything out. And also, you know, you've got to put it out there and make a note of why are you actually doing it? So are you doing it for an event? Are you doing it for yourself? Are you doing it just for health? The other good thing to do is to actually join a group of people.
Okay.
So sometimes it's much easier training. Some people prefer to train in a group than on their own, especially if you're going outside. It also represents an element of safety too. But then it's a commitment. You commit. A lot of running groups and stuff out there have WhatsApp groups, and you acknowledge that you put in sort of register that you're going to be there the next day, and everyone sort of expects you to be there. So there's an accountability beyond yourself because you're part of a group that also assists with that. The other thing is, you know, you've got to, if you are able to do it and you have a good week of running, you are able to reward yourself. You know, say, you know, if I manage to get so many runs in this week, this month, get this distance up, you know, look for a new shirt, new training shirt, or something that you enjoy. You know, go out for a meal if you can, or put your feet up, take a day off when you need, those kind of things. So just give yourself small things to work towards, over and above your normal, you know, your typically fitness things, like your weight, for instance, or your distance or race that you're going to.
All right, so we've got accountability, we've got setting goals, we've got a reward system that works for you, right? So those are all the three things that you can put in place, amongst others, to motivate yourself. Now, if you're new to exercising and or you know, you've just started out on the fitness journey, let's talk hydration, the importance of that, and how best to do it. I see a lot of people. Lots of people go out on the road with a water bottle in hand or two, which seems excessive. But that tends to be the trend around where I live. I just ask myself, surely you won't, you know, you're not going to collapse from dehydration from that 3K, 4K walk.
You know, it's firstly, if we just take the last couple of months, we've had this besides all the rain, we've had a lot of it's been very hot, and it's been also very humid. And, you know, your body, you sweat to cool yourself down. So in a situation where there's heat, obviously you're going to be sweating, so your body, you need to replace the fluids that you're losing. That's the first thing. Secondly, when it's humid, like it has been, you tend to sweat a little bit more because no evaporation. So your body starts to overheat and freak out a little bit. So it starts to produce more sweat because that sweat isn't evaporating and cooling you down. So you're essentially losing more water. And the other side of it is that most of us exist in a partially dehydrated state because maybe we're at work, we sit in an air-conditioned environment, you think, well, I'm not actually sweating, you're not really thirsty, maybe you're drinking coffee, that kind of stuff. But you've got to realize, when you see it in winter, when you breathe, you see the water vapor coming out of your mouth. And our body produces water as part of, as a byproduct of energy production, produces water. And we breathe it out all the time. So you actually dehydrate without you realizing. So by making a point of drinking water, and it shouldn't only be when you're training. You should have it, it's an absolute winner because actually there's an energy cost to your body processing water that you drink. So first thing in the morning, you wake up, have a glass of water. Your body has to process that water. Calories, there's no calories in water, but your body actually burns calories processing it, which is quite a winner.
Okay.
First, the next thing is that you are improving your hydration, and to be conscious of it, but that you have before, during, and after, is quite important. And everyone sweats at different rates, and you know, it depends on the intensity of your session, the time of day, that kind of thing. But it's a good habit to be in all the time anyway. What I will say, though, learning with water and hydration, you know, a lot of times you'll see people, and I said often with kids at school, their parents think, okay, flip, they're doing sports, they must have an energy drink. And it's not, say, I wouldn't say one of the tin drinks, but well, those are coming like squeezy bottles, I won't mention brands and stuff.
Sure.
But, you know, a lot of those are loaded with sugar. And unless the child is doing an endurance event where you're doing heavy training for longer than an hour, for instance, you don't really need additional like sugars and stuff like that with your training. So, yes, they do. Those energy drinks often come with sodium and potassium in them, so the salts you need that you're sweating out. But, you know, whatever you're drinking in there, if your body doesn't use it, it gets rid of it anyway. So what we normally recommend with guys that we train, including our rugby players and that kind of thing, is that once or twice a week, just have a sachet of rehydrate that makes sure that your salt levels are adequate, that prevents cramping, that allows normal muscle function, and if whatever your body doesn't need of those salts, it just passes out. But that's it, as opposed to having the energy drinks that are generally full of sugar and stuff as well.
So what is it? Is it very good marketing on the part of those people that are selling those energy drinks? Why do we think that, especially kids or even ourselves, why do we think we need energy drinks when, as you say, we're hardly completing an Ironman event?
Yeah. Okay, there's good marketing. And look, there's always a place for everything. It's just, we're not sort of told where that place is.
Okay.
So in mass marketing, you're addressing a massive audience across a spectrum of events or training skill levels, whatever it may be, ages. And it can be that. And, often these organizations are big sponsors for an event. So you're getting bombed with that sort of stuff. And like I said, it's not that there isn't a place, but it's just the right place.
Sure. Do some of these drinks help then with muscle recovery, for instance, Derek?
Yes. They help with, like we said, with restoring your salts, your sodium and your potassium and so on, and those, like we said, are very important for normal muscle function anyway. Recovery is about hydration. So as long as you're getting something in as well, returning your hydration levels to normal, because there's actually, I pulled out a really interesting table showing the adverse effects of dehydration. And sort of at 1% loss of water, because your body's made up of 60% water. So if you lose about 1%, it's where you start to feel quite thirsty. Mm-hmm. 2%, you become really uncomfortable. You lose appetite. Your performance is impaired. I'm only going to go to 3 here. But 3, dry mouth, decrease in blood plasma, urinary output. You start to really, your body starts to struggle. Okay? And if you think that every process in our body requires fluid and water and liquid and so on, that's, at least if you're having something, that's a good thing.
Okay.
But in terms of recovery itself, it's a combination of factors. So you also have to gauge whether your session was very intense. If it was an intense session, then actually make sure you build in a cool down. Most of us neglect a cool down and a stretch afterwards. And remember our discussion about myofascial release with a foam roller not long ago. Those kind of things are vital for recovery. And they make sure that while you're still warm, you've improved your flexibility, you've used a little bit of a walk at the end of your run, should we say, where you've restored normal functioning, so your heart rate comes down comfortably, your cells are getting good blood supply to help and oxygen to help them recover, and also any sort of waste products, metabolic waste, is being removed and processed to get rid of, being eliminated by the body. So a proper warm down is good, stretching, myofascial release, hydration, and then nutrition, of course. Mm-hmm. So if you're doing very intense events, you do need to replace sugars and stuff that your body has utilized, like glycogen, and also have some protein to help your muscles recover from the damage that occurs while we're training.
All right. Is it fact or fiction that, you know, one needs to change up that gym routine or that exercise routine from time to time, or not from time to time, but regularly rather, and not just stick with the same old, or if it works for you, why fix it? If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Okay, so the first thing here is that there are a couple of things that you call the principles of training, and without sounding a bit weird, this is almost like our 10 commandments of training. And one of those principles is the principle of overload. So we place a stress on the body greater than that it is used to. So this puts the body in a position where in a state that it doesn't like. So its response to that over time with regular dosages of that is adaptation, and that's changes that we see in fitness, in growing a muscle size, flexibility, all of those things. And those principles cover all of the components of training, so your cardio, your strength, the flexibility, your speed, agility, and so on. Now, if we don't keep up a level of stimulus and keep building on, because once the body's comfortable, we need to take it to the next level to stress it out. So we should mix our programs up in order to keep going forward. And it doesn't mean that we always have to go heavier and heavier and heavier. If we do, say, for instance, we have 3 incrementally heavy, more challenging weeks, and then the 4th week we tap off a little bit, that's fine. Or if we're doing a gym program with a split routine for strength, we might train for 6 weeks in that program and then change it up. It's always good. And also, from as much as there's sort of comfort to knowing what you're doing, a lot of people like say, if it works for me, why must I change it? You're really not going to keep adapting. So you're going to sort of hold yourself back. But at the same time, mentally, to be doing the same stuff eventually becomes a bit of a drag. So you need to have a little bit of stimulus as well. If we start to get bored of something, the chances of us sustaining or maintaining that regime is going to be very, very small.
All right. Other tips, Derek, that you turn to when you are either motivating someone as they start out on their fitness journey, or you're speaking to someone, well, who's a seasoned, is a seasoned athlete, but some hacks that you turn to when it comes to exercising?
Okay, so some of the hacks, like if we look at endurance athletes, well, I think one of the things endurance athletes least likely to do, if they're runners or cyclists, they don't really go and do any strength work. And a little bit of strength work every week, especially on your legs, your core structure, your upper body also needs strength. Those kind of things are very beneficial for your training. And most guys ignore it, but they don't realize how good it is for you. That's the first thing. Secondly, very, very important, and it can also be a challenge purely because of cost, but if you are going to look at yourself as participating over long term, particularly where, like with running and so on, a good pair of shoes is vital. So it may look funky, but it may not be funky for your feet. So like some really blingy looking shoes out there, but are they really good for your feet? That's the question. So once your feet are in trouble, you aren't able to continue with exercise and it becomes an issue. The other thing, like a small, benefit your training by, or improve, enhance your training by making sure that you're active the rest of the day. So don't just do your training and sit down for the rest of the day. Don't do an hour in the morning and then think, okay, well, I've done it for the day. You need to still keep doing other stuff just to boost that. And it also assists with your recovery. You don't get so stiff if you don't sit all the day, for the whole day. If you're selecting clothing, particularly now as the days are getting, the darkness is upon us, make sure, get clothes that are bright, that have little reflective strips on them. You have those on your shoes as well. Mm-hmm. Run with the headlights if you're outside. That's not only because you want drivers to see you, but also because the roads are riddled with potholes at the moment. And unless you want to take a tumble, please get to see where you're going. Mm-hmm. And then, let me just quickly say, I actually made a note here for everything. like I said, make sure you've got to program yourself to think, okay, my training routine includes a warm-up, includes stretching, includes my meals. You prepare all of these things for yourself beforehand. Your clothing is out. If you need a quick cup of coffee, make sure the kettle is full before you. So as you get up, you can whack the kettle on, put on some clothes, and then off you go for your run. And that's your food and stuff prepared for when you get back. those small things. And lastly, you know, it may take a couple of sessions to get into a good habit, but also choose things that are and set goals for yourself that are attainable. Don't put them so far ahead they're out of reach almost.
Yeah.
Look at the short things and feel good. Like, just okay, I'm just going to be able to do it till the end of the week. And then at the end of the week, say, right, I made it this week. Let's try for three sessions this week again. And work like that. Those kind of, and you've got to enjoy it. If you don't enjoy it, I mean, you're not going to enjoy every training session. It's just impossible. But if you enjoy something, the greater the likelihood you're going to continue with it.
Sure. A quick one before I say goodbye. You touched on choosing the right pair of shoes, and that can be incredibly difficult for so many people. You don't know if you pronate or if you vacillate or if you, I'm kidding, but you know, it's like, oh, I don't know how my legs move. I don't know what my gait looks like, you know, and you can walk into a retail store and they ostensibly will help you. And sometimes I wonder if that young guy at the sneaker shop actually knows what he's talking about.
Look, if you're looking at a rather large commercial store, I know that some of them have actual running, sort of running platforms that you run on, and they assess your running for you. And I think that the guys in those sections have been trained, because, as I've always said, and I say to the guys that we actually educate to become trainers, the public is not uninformed anymore. They kind of know what's going on. So I do believe that in most of the situations where these guys are operating in the shoe section, they have been well briefed. And if you're really serious about it, then you know our natural thing is to go to the big commercial store, because it's in the shopping center where we're going to get something else. But there are lots of specialist running stores and stuff out as well, just like the specialist bike shops. You know, these are smaller businesses, yes, but often the guys that are in there are incredibly good runners themselves, and they have a huge passion for it. And their level of services that I've encountered, particularly with some of the ones in the shop somewhere just out in Linden Way, outstanding. And you know, these guys, that is what their whole function is, to make sure guys run better or ladies run better. So if you have the time, go to one of the specialist shops as well. And, you know, if you're not happy, and most of them, if they say to you, and this is quite a good thing, a lot of these specialist shops, they give you 10 days. If you don't like the shoes or it feels uncomfortable, you bring them back. Mm-hmm. And not many places will do that.
Absolutely.
So if they're giving you that option, then you know that they are really looking after you.
Yeah.
And they're interested in how the comfort of your shoes.
And just really quickly, the sort of assessment that they do in those specialty stores, it doesn't take, it doesn't take very long. But, you know, if you aren't sure, if you're starting out and you're not quite sure what it is that you need, what are the kinds of things that they ought to be looking at? And of course, you can expect to try on shoes and do a bit of jogging or running.
Yeah, sure. So look, if one thing you can do for yourself is just stand in front of a mirror and have a look at your feet. And if you're quite flat-footed, that can cause an issue in itself, particularly if you have no arch, and when you're standing and you lift your foot up and the arch still isn't there, then basically flat-footed. And if you've never had an issue with your knees or anything, you should be fine. Where it starts to become an issue is the foot conditions we can have, or ankle conditions. Uh-huh. So you mentioned pronation just now. So pronation is where the weight falls into the inside of the foot. So we start to get, you can see the sort of like a bunion formation on the just behind the big toe, the metatarsal phalangeal joint. So we start swelling. The big toe has got a callus on the inside, or on the sort of the medial side of it. If someone lifts their foot up and the arch is present, and they put their weight down on their foot and the arch disappears, it means that the body is rolling. Or the foot is rolling inwards, or ankle is rolling inwards, and what this does then is pull the knee out of the alignment. So remember that your foot, once it makes contact with the ground, it transmits force up into your body. And if everything is out of alignment, that's where there's going to be an issue. The other one, which is supination, is where the weight is on the outside of the foot. And as not being as bad in terms of long-term stress on the body, it's also not efficient in terms of running. So if I'm not really putting any pressure on my big toe and I'm taking off, so I'm basically running on the outside of my foot, your big toe is vital in our propulsion system. So the last part of your foot to leave the ground should be your big toe. And that actually, besides also using your calf structure and triggering movement, also creates stability through your fascia up your back, up the back of your leg, right up to the base of your neck, actually. So it's vital that those are corrected.
Okay.
So if you're looking in the mirror, does it look like your ankles are rolled inwards or rolled outwards? Those are the kind of things that they're going to be looking for. And sometimes what's not evident when we're standing still, they pick up when you're running or walking. So that's the kind of thing that they'll be looking at as well.
All right. Fantastic stuff. Thanks so much, Derek, for those tips. As per usual, always a pleasure speaking to you.
Thank you very much for having me. You take care.
All right. Derek Archer is a director at FitPro. That's the Institute of Fitness Professionals. Well,